King Juan Carlos puts together his meeting, you understand that this is policy. Someone like Juan Carlos doesn't just gather a few people to a meeting. He is, according to that notice, the secretary of the Spanish house, whatever that, in Arab house in Madrid, and he brought together the foreign ministers of Syria and Saudi Arabia and Iraq and Jordan and Yemen and Tunisia and the United Arab Republics, there's three, four more. He brought together the Arab foreign ministers. Of course, Israel isn't there. Why should Israel be there as they discuss how they're going to tear Israel to bits and remove it from Palestine and so on and so forth? This is what King Juan Carlos is doing behind Israel's back. The key is, why are Israeli leaders always going to King Juan Carlos whenever they've got whatever ideas they've got? Last week, our foreign minister, Tzipi Livni, was meeting King Juan Carlos, and we, of course, have to ask the big question, with a meeting like this, what the hell was she doing with King Juan Carlos in the first place? And the answer, by the way, is the Vatican, and it's a long, complicated answer, who is King Juan Carlos, but the man is very big. He was educated in Rome, and the Vatican, after giving him a fine Jesuit education, moved him to Spain during Franco's period. We're talking about someone who was given the title of guardian of the holy place of Jerusalem. It's a medieval title that the Vatican takes extremely seriously. He is the guy in charge of the Vatican's finagling in the Middle East. He held a meeting, and that meeting stated that Israel's finished. People, you have to take this seriously. This is something that isn't properly understood. The decision makers have decided that Israel goes. Now, when it goes has a lot to do with what goes on in the Vatican. We don't know when they've decided. And I'll tell you about a writer I just read. I'm going to tell you about two writers today who I just read, and they're both very important to me. But one is a woman named Maury. And that's how she wants to be known. I know her a little differently. Maury is M-A-U-R-I. She wrote a book called The Vatican Ratline. That's what it's called, The Vatican Ratline. And I received it in the mail, and I read it this week. And she knows what's going on. And I received a second. I'm going to go over two Catholic writers today who know what the Vatican is planning for Israel.
All right, fine. Well, why don't you hold that thought till we get back, Barry?
But okay.
Basically, nothing as it appears to be. And certainly, what is the Vatican concerned about? What happens in Palestine? Why, they are a part of this hierarchy that's directing everything going on in the world today. We'll be right back.
The disciples asked Jesus in Matthew 24, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world? You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. And there shall be famines, disease, and earthquakes in many places." We are living in this time of Earth's history. Many people are trying to understand the climactic world events in light of human wisdom. But without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. 2 Peter says, "We have a more sure word of prophecy, and you do well if you take heed. But first know this, that no prophecy of the Scripture is of any private interpretation." The Bible says, "We'd like you to receive this new offer, Packet B, The Unholy Alliance." These materials document the global leaders, political and religious, behind the scenes. You will receive information regarding America in prophecy, tyrants and wars, the New World Order, and much more. As always, these materials are shipped to you at no charge. Please call 1-888-211-1715. That's 1-888-211-1715. And ask for Packet B.
Do you know where the 78 potentially active volcanoes in U.S. are located? And do you know the locations of the top 300 prime terrorist targets? You can find these answers and more in the new interactive CD book, Prudent Places USA. With the more than 50 interactive parameters, you can pinpoint natural and man-made disaster areas, brewing environmental catastrophes, the safest cities, the best places for solar and wind energy, and much, much more. Complete with 3 gigabytes of detailed information on each of 3,000-plus counties in the U.S., in including 550 high-resolution full-color maps and full-color photographs, as well as detailed information and analysis to help you zero in on the best places to live, the ideal location for cabins and vacation homes, as well as safe and unsafe areas. Get Prudent Places USA for only $29 plus shipping by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438 to order on the web or at BerkeyWater.com.
How are you feeling today? I ask because if you have health challenges, then reading our free booklet about the most amazing discovery of our time is crucial. The booklet is about an amazing fruit from Southeast Asia they call mangosteen. It's a centuries-old medicinal fruit whose time has come, and it has amassed 40 years of published research. We have information and testimonials from all over the world about the health potentials of this amazing fruit. This powerful botanical has contributed to the well-being of millions of people the world over with health concerns just like yours. You can have the 22-page e-booklet absolutely free. We'll also refer you a website with links to actual testimonials and product information. Could this fruit help you in your quest for total health? Find out why mangosteen is known as the queen of all fruits and why it is fast becoming the best-selling wellness product ever brought to the market. Your health is in your hands. Do something about it today. Call 800-681-1909. Again, that's 800-681-1909.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network, our guest is Barry Shavers. We're talking about Juan Carlos. We're talking about the Vatican. We're talking about, of course, the Juan Carlos represents the black nobility that has been around really for centuries. It's the ruling houses of Europe that tie into these dark spirits and forces we talk about. Certainly those influences in the Vatican. Of course, they're in the Catholic and they're in the Protestant Church, and they are the leadership of Israel today, all intent upon betraying the Jewish people in Palestine. So pick up the story there.
Hello?
Yes, go right ahead, Barry.
Oh, now look, I am going to do something very painful. I'm going to give you a website so I can get them out of the way right now. This is, the first person is a professor. He was fired from University of Pennsylvania for expressing too Jewish a point of view. His name is Francisco Gil White. Now, his father used to be the Mexican premier, finance minister. He was known for great honesty and so on and so forth. His address is www.hirhome.com.
Wait a minute. H-I-R, what?
H-O-M-E.
Mm-hmm.
Herhome.com.
Okay.
Now, that's number one. Now, number two is Maury, and her, wait a sec, I'm rushing to it right now. Her address is www.reflectionsinthenight.com. That's reflectionsinthenight.com. Now I can talk to these people, talk about these people. The Jews have abandoned me. I mean, that's just ridiculous to say that, but there's been a terrible, terrible attack on me over time amongst the Jews. And there's no getting through them anymore. There's just no getting through them. They're going to die. And I'm sitting here knowing that. I mean, really, I just know that. There's nothing much I can do about anything. If I go back to Israel, they'll put me out of commission. I'm doing a better job where I am right now. And I'm not doing much of a job, so I'm going to let you know. But the fact of the matter is the Catholics, they came up to me this week. Okay, Catholic number one, Francisco Gil White. He sent an amazing article all over the internet. It's my research. I sent him all my books a couple of weeks ago. I have done research on Ben Heck's magnificent volume called Perfidy. Perfidy is tragic in the worst sense of the word. It is the story of Rudolf Kastner. Rudolf Kastner was the Jewish agency's agent in Hungary. He was the one who negotiated with Adolf Eichmann and could have saved 800,000 Jews. Eichmann let him have them all. He didn't want to kill them anymore. He wasn't interested. He wanted to end the war in one piece, but Kastner turned him down. Kastner was negotiating with Eichmann and turned him down. He saved 3,500 home-brewed Sabbateans and friends of the family and let the rest kill themselves. That order came from Chaim Weizmann and the Jewish Agency of Jerusalem. It was the most shocking story in Israel of the 1950s. Was first of all the trial. It was not of Rudolf Kastner, believe it or not. It was of a journalist named Malkiel Greenwald, and he was sued for smearing Kastner. Well, the judge slowly understood that Kastner had betrayed the Jewish people and had sent 800,000 people to their deaths. Malkiel Greenwald was acquitted. He went home. Everything was fine. But the Jewish state, for the first time, revealed who they were. They let the Jews of Hungary die, and there is worse to come. Much, much worse. Now, this I'm going to do from my own experience, and I'm not going to use Francisco, because I don't just have a little bit of experience. I lived in Israel, and I met real witnesses to murders. And one was a witness to the murder of Rudolf Kastner. Rudolf Kastner was shot, and he was supposed to be dead. He was shot by the Shabak. He couldn't stay around anymore. He was much too much of a liability, but he survived. And he was put in the hospital. By the way, the name of the Shabak agent was revealed. It was the Shabak, just so you know. I'm not just throwing out that name because it happens to be a fancy name like CIA. All of this is in perfidy. Go look at the book. Or, in fact, look at Francisco's article. But the point of the matter is that all these big shots came to his room. He was taken to the room where he was going to survive. It was in Hadassah Hospital, Tel Aviv. Today it is Ichilov, where Rabin was murdered. And one person phoned me up finally. And his name was Yossi Cohen. He lived in Tel Aviv, in downtown Tel Aviv, with his wife. And he says, look, I ran the lab at Hadassah. I was there the night they killed Kastner. I know how it was done. I may as well get this off my chest and tell it to you. And what do you know? I was going to meet still another witness. I took with me, his name was Werker. He was the head of the Rabin Reinvestigation Committee, thoroughly infiltrated, again, by the Shabak and their lawyer, Leitner. Darshan Leitner was working for the Shabak. There was nothing I could do. It was nothing I could do to bring sanity to this, but I'm going backwards, and I shouldn't. I went with Werker, who was the president of the Rabin Reinvestigation Committee. He was also the head of the Israeli Chartered Accountants Association, and we met Yossi Cohen. And Werker was enormously interested by this testimony. He said the murderers came in. He said there was only one who did the actual murdering. And they know how he was murdered because he was all fixed up from all the bullet holes that he took. His whole stomach was filled with stitches. The murderer came in and put a pillow over Rudolf Kastner's face so nobody could hear the screams. And then with his knee, he pressed the stomach as hard as he could, and he popped open all of the stitches, and that was the end of Kastner. He bled to death then and there. That was the real murder of Rudolf Kastner. That has never been put on any American radio show that I'm aware of. That is found in my book, Save Israel. I'll give you the address. Look, folks, this is the address to buy my books. And by the way, the downloads are really cheap, $10, and it downloads right to your computer. The address is lulu.com, www.lulu.com. Write my name in the top where it says search. You'll get to the book, Save Israel. that is the whole business of how they murdered Kastner. I assume Francisco is reading that as we say these words. I know how they murdered Kastner because people talked to me in Israel. That was the actual murder.
Well, Kastner, in Hadassah Hospital,
which is now Ichilov, where they actually murdered Rabin as well.
Well, no, but why did they Kastner? Because he had let the 800,000 Jews die? Was that it?
He was exposed a mile high.
Okay, fine. I mean, so it was exposed that he had betrayed the Jews. He was working with certainly
He didn't go and say that I received my orders from David Ben-Gurion. What? That would be the next step. They shut him down.
Okay, fine.
It was that simple. No one was ever going to talk to him again. He was too dangerous. The murder of Kastner and the book Perfidy explains it all. Now here is where I'm doing right, because I'm not doing terribly right. I'm going to the computer. I'm going to read you his conclusion before we go on to the great Marie and her amazing book. But here's his conclusion. Wait, I'm up to Marie. His conclusion is... Here it is. Are you ready?
Right.
Okay. Here's what it sounds. This is a very difficult lesson for Jews to learn because they don't know the above history, educated as they have been by the leaders of labor Zionism, who to this day control most of the major Jewish organizations in the diaspora, as well as the Israeli government, the Israeli educational system, and the Israeli media. And it's difficult to learn because they would rather cling to their illusions rather than to their very lives. Is it inevitable? He quotes George Santanier, correctly said, "Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. The Jews are about to repeat their own tragic past. Is this inevitable? Well, no. But without a revolution, it is a certain outcome. If the Israeli Jews simply trust that their so-called leaders will defend them, or that the diaspora brethren will come on a white horse to rescue them, their fate will be identical to that of the Hungarian Jews in World War II. The Hungarian Jews trusted Kastner and they died." That's his conclusion. Does it sound familiar?
Right, it certainly does.
Thank you. Thank you. That is a university professor, and until he got fired for defending the Jews, he was a very, very good university professor, I'm told. As I said, Francisco Gil White, I have influenced one person. Now shall we go on to the second person?
All right.
I'm assuming
that Gil Wright was not Jewish at all.
They're Catholic.
They're Catholic, okay. Go ahead.
They're Catholic. Francisco is more than just Catholic. He's Catholic trained, and his father was the finance minister of Mexico.
Okay, fine. We'll be back in just a moment with Barry. Shemesh, nothing is it appears to be, ladies and gentlemen. When you understand that, everything makes sense, because if you're looking for logic in the world today, you're not going to find it. We'll be back in just a moment here with Barry Shemesh, right here at Genesis.
Some people believe a group of wealthy men control political parties, the American media, and the wealth of our nation. Is this true? Dr. Stanley Monteith spent 40 years studying secret societies and subversive movements. He lived in Africa for 3 years, and when he returned home, he studied the writings of the men who shaped the modern world. His book, Brotherhood of Darkness, identifies the people who control the world and the organizations they created. Dr. Monteith exposes the movement behind Rhodes Scholarships, the origin of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the myths surrounding communism. He discusses the goal of all covert organizations, so if you read Brotherhood of Darkness, you will learn a secret that has been passed down through the centuries. When you learn this secret, you will understand what the future holds and what you must do to help preserve our nation. Call and order your copy. 877-300-7645. Only $12.95. That's 877-300-7695.
Ted Anders for Midas, February 23rd, 2007, gold, 683.10, ounce gold coins are at 704.92, 355.01 for half, 177.48 for quarter ounce. That's 704.92, 355.01, 177.48. On June 4, 1963, an unknown presidential decree, Executive Order 11,110, was signed with the authority to strip the Federal Reserve Bank of its power to lend money to the United States government and interest. With the stroke of a pen, Kennedy would have put the Fed out of business. The November assassination quieted the production of the new currency. However, the executive order still stands unrepealed. Midas has the Kennedy versus Fed document. Call 800-686-2237. Unlike your liberty, the paper is free. Call 800-686-2237. If you're interested in breaking the bondage of taxation and debt, call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
The war on terrorism, will it be fought overseas or will it affect us here at home? If you are like most folks, you want to be prepared, but can't afford an underground shelter. So what do you do? Did you know that you can use your home as a shelter against fallout and biological or chemical attacks? With a little know-how, it's not that difficult. Sheltering in place, surviving acts of terrorism from biological, chemical, and radioactive fallout. Developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable diseases, and has worked as a nuclear specialist for the U.S. government, gives you easy-to-follow video instructions and walks you step-by-step through the process of preparing your home as a shelter. Get this critical video every American needs for only $29 plus shipping. Order by calling New Millennium today at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438. Or order on the web at BerkeyWater.com.
Are you concerned about the high cost of prescription drugs? Since January of 2006, RxDrugCard.com members have saved an average of $33 per prescription filled. That's over 46% savings. The average savings for generic drugs was over 71%. RxDrugCard.com is the only major discount prescription drug plan that offers a price lookup page, so you can get an idea of your discounted price before you enroll. RxDrugCard.com is for anyone who pays for their own prescriptions. There are no age restrictions, all prescriptions are covered, and 95% of all pharmacies in the U.S. participate, including Walmart, Walgreens, CVS Pharmacy, and many more. With RxDrugCard.com, you will save immediately with no messy forms or paperwork. Membership fees start at only $4.50 per month and include a 30-day unconditional money-back guarantee. Visit us at www.rxdrugcard.com or call us at 888-216-2461. That's 888-216-2461. Do it today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at the Genesis Network. Our guest is Barry Shamish, and we're simply talking about the betrayal of the Jewish nation, actually by certain people within the Jewish nation. So pick the story up there.
Well, I want to make one last point about Gil's article before going on to Maury. What Gil doesn't know, again, is the fate of Raoul Wallenberg. Now, this is a person who the Jewish people respect at a level, it's just hard to believe. He risked his own neck trying to save the Hungarian Jews, and it turns out he was saving them from the Zionists. Now, this is something that people just don't want to understand. And over time, this myth has been built around Raoul Wallenberg that the Russians killed him. Now, why would the Russians kill him? They had nothing better to do than to kill a Swedish diplomat, but this is what they'll have you believe. Now, what I say over and over again is that the Russians didn't kill him, the Zionists killed him. He was killed under order from the Jewish Agency of Jerusalem because Raoul Wallenberg, in saving these Hungarian Jews, knew the secrets of Kastner, and he knew the secrets of the Zionists. He knew that they wanted every Jew in Europe wiped out, and they would start again from Israel and build a new nation built on Sabbatean ideals. This, believe it or not, was what Raoul Wallenberg found out when he rescued the Jews. He was murdered. The Russians, if not take the blame, they didn't deny it. They just kept quiet about it. That was another murder by these Bolshevik Zionists. And by the way, I will state this I don't know how many times. At the same time as these awful Bolshevik Zionists, what are known today as the left, who are destroying Israel today were at work, there was a good Zionism. It was the Zionism of Jabotinsky and Begin. It was trying to prevent the Holocaust. It was the Zionism of Peter Hillel Cook, who ran across America organizing rallies, but they could not defeat the Sabbateans. They couldn't defeat the likes of Frankfurter, and they couldn't defeat the likes of Brandeis and Magnus, and all these Sabbateans surrounding FDR. They couldn't defeat them. It was that simple. They lost. But nonetheless, there was a good Zionism. It no longer exists. And what's left in Israel is just this Bolshevik Zionism. Right now it's called Kadima. That's the latest name for the party. But it's still headed by Shimon Peres. He's second in command there. He'll take over when Olmert falls down from police investigation. Neither here nor there. It is still run by Peres and the Vatican. And this is what it's not understand. And the Jews cannot, they can't relate to this message.
Well, now,
it's
why,
too much
what,
for them.
What is
and
the
And this is a message that I've given, and people just say, nah, he's crazy.
Well, now, what's
it's
what's
a conspiracy.
The,
he's making it up.
What's
well,
the
I've got two Catholic writers, and they're both very, very good. And both, by the way, wrote brilliant pieces. I'm going to, do I have time now to start into Maury's book?
Well, not really. We're, in other words, we've only got maybe about 2 minutes here before we go to the next break. But what's the relationship between the Vatican and the Sabbateans?
Well, it's huge, but I have to do Maury's book to do that.
All right, fine.
I mean, this is the meeting between Adam Weishaupt and Jacob Frank at the home of Mayor Amschel Rothschild in 1785. They concocted this awful conspiracy. It's not just, most of the time, the Vatican just stomps all over these Sabbateans. Nonetheless, the Sabbateans are the basis for the Council on Foreign Relations. And it was the agents of the Rothschilds. The worst might have been August Belmont. Belmont was a Jew who converted. They're all Jews who converted, by the way. That's what Sabbateans do. Well, there was also John Jacob Schiff and Jacob Astor, and all these people were Jews, but they became Protestant, and they married within their circle, and they practiced Sabbateanism on weekends. And Al Gore's daughter is married to John Jacob Schiff's grandson, and this group sticks together, and this group has decided that Israel goes, and this group has decided that all the Jews in Israel go. And this, believe it or not, gives them great physical satisfaction. Okay, now as soon as we can get rolling on the next book, I'll dive into depth.
All right, fine. Well, we've only got about 30 seconds, so I don't want you to get started because I want to hear the whole story myself. And again, those websites are www.hearhome.com, HIRHOME.com, and www.reflectioninthenight.com. That's reflectioninthenight.com. I want you to go both those websites, pull down the articles there, and so that you'll be able to understand so much of what Barry's saying today. We'll be right back.
If you would like a copy of this show, come to GCNLive.com and reserve it today, or call toll free 877-300-7645.
What is the secret of the sea? It's the exciting food from the sea, and it can be yours with Nature's Original Superfood from Wachter's. This excellent, exclusive blend of Wachter's sea vegetation is bursting with over 65 trace minerals and vitamins. Our sea vegetation contains 40 times more nutrients than any land-grown vegetation. You would need almost 20 pounds of alfalfa, 10 pounds of spirulina, and 40 pounds of wheat to get the same nutritional value found in only 1 pound of Wachter's exclusive blend of sea plants. Over 75 years of experience has made Wachter's the leader in sea vegetation nutrition. Experience the benefits for yourself today. Call Wachter's today to order your bottle of sea vegetation. Join us on a business associate call to learn more at 800-682-7100. That's 800-682-7100. Or visit our website at wachters.com. That's W-A-C-H-T-E-R-S.com.
The war on terrorism. Will it be fought overseas or will it affect us here at home? If you are like most folks, you want to be prepared but can't afford an underground shelter. So what do you do? Did you know that you can use your home as a shelter against fallout and biological or chemical attacks? With a little know-how, it's not that difficult. Sheltering in place, surviving acts of terrorism from biological, chemical, and radioactive fallout, developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable diseases, and has worked as a nuclear specialist for the U.S. government, gives you easy-to-follow video instructions and walks you step-by-step through the process of preparing your home as a shelter. Get this critical video every American needs for only $29 plus shipping. Order by calling New Millennium today at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438. Or order on the web at BerkeyWater.com.
Government is best, which governs least.
Wake up and smell the fascism.
Being in government means never having to say you're sorry.
What part of unconstitutional do you not understand, George?
In today's world full of tyranny and injustice, sometimes it seems the only thing we still have is our freedom of speech. Exercise your freedom of speech by purchasing your choice of hundreds of different Liberty stickers, from humorous to serious, at LibertyStickers.com. LibertyStickers.com can even customize your own bumper stickers. It's time to stand up for what you believe. Invest in your freedom. Get your stickers at LibertyStickers.com for your family, friends, and community. Go to LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. That's 877-873-9626. And express your freedom of speech today. Call 877-873-9626. That's 877-873-9626.
Well, Dr. Stan, our guest is Barry Shamus, and Barry, pick the story up there.
Well, what I'm going to do, first of all, your readers, your listeners will be very excited. I'm just sent you Francisco's email address. If there's any problem, you phone me, and I'll track down his phone for you.
Okay.
And I'll send you Maury's email address and find a couple Catholics who are really, really very upset about what's going on in the Vatican. These are great writers. Now, you'll be a little surprised, by the way, about our next writer, and that is, I'm going to call her by the name she writes under, which is Maury, M-A-U-R-I. Now, I'm going to put this article with all the explanations up on my website. So, people, go to the BarryChamersWebsite.com in about, oh, I don't know, let's say 8 hours. It'll be up there. That's BarryChamish.com, and we'll have this whole article on. Now, I'm going to give you some quotes from Maury, and you'll see if you understand. From page 103, are we ready?
Right.
Okay. The false messiah, Shabtai Tzvi, founded the Donma sect in the 1600s. His followers founded the Sabbatean cult. The movement spread through Europe in the 18th century by Jacob Frank and his followers, the Frankists. Add Jesuit influence, and the automatic result is the deterioration of the cult into mind-controlled criminal activity and Satanism. Could such a group work with the Nazis in the killing of millions of fellow Jews? That's just a quote. Now, from page 108, the principles of Zionism, the creation of a Jewish state in Palestine, seem a benevolent answer to worldwide anti-Semitism, but one must always question the random acts of kindness by the global elite. Zionism may have led to the Holocaust of the remaining Jews in Europe. 111, we have the Vatican's goal of control of Jerusalem moves ever closer to reality through the help of corruption at the highest levels of the Zionist movement in Israel. That extra element of war was added by pushing the Muslims around in the area so that there could be no peace. Jimmy Carter, the Council on Foreign Relations, ordered a covert war against the Soviets in Afghanistan, and the CIA funded the Taliban. The secret training and funding of Muslim groups for war continued alongside the training and funding of Israel. The end result of this intentional setting of one group against another was a guaranteed Holocaust in the Middle East, and so on and so forth. You like her writing?
Well, she's very, very good.
Yes. I take it you spotted a little of my influence.
Yes, I did. Well, of course, what's so difficult for people to understand is that we've been funding both sides over there. I mean, we organized Hamas. We organized this radical Islamic movement. We've been pushing this for a long time. We're funding both Egypt and Israel. Why would you do something like that? I mean, if we're so supposedly so Israel, pro-Israel, and the truth of the matter is we're setting Israel up to be destroyed. I agree with you totally.
Well, let's agree with Maury now, page 120. The Vatican had gone to a lot of trouble to get the Jews where they wanted them, which was in Israel, and they didn't want them prematurely wiped out. The Jews were the scapegoat for the war in Europe, and the Vatican was positioning them to be the scapegoat for the coming war in the Middle East. I think that about sums it up.
Yeah, and this war, in the coming war in the Middle East, has been planned. You can go see it going back at least 20 years. I suspect it was planned 100 years ago.
Way older than 20 years.
Oh yeah, but I mean, it's easy to trace. But I agree with you. I think this goes right back to the beginning of the 20th century. They began planning what's happening right now, and I think that we are living, and certainly one of the most exciting times in history. And I think the average person cannot really believe that we are moving into a massive war with the Muslim world.
Well, again, Israel will not survive a massive war with the Muslim world, and this is something maybe your readers don't realize. Unless Israel actually uses its nuclear option and says this has got to stop or Tehran is rubble, which frankly they didn't last summer, When all of northern Israel was abandoned for 40 days, well, that's their only option. They cannot survive the war that's coming up. And I will describe that war if you want. And it doesn't take a genius to figure out that in the war councils of Damascus and the war councils of Tehran, they took very good lessons from the last war. And they noted that 4,000 missiles drove Israel into the sand and made them non-functional. Well, how would you like 10,000 in one day? How would you like them to be Scuds, not little Katyushas? How would you like them all to be in the Tel Aviv region? That's the plan for the next war. They're not going to bother with settlements. They'll pick them up at the end of the war. They'll pick up the settlements and destroy them. First, they're going to destroy the Sabbatean Israel. And this is where the Sabbateans got taken for a ride, and they're going to take all the Jews down with them. Even though, as we have gone through this, the top Sabbateans are going to have a lot of money from the dead Jews. And remind me, we'll talk about Bronfman stealing $6.5 billion from the Swiss banks, of which he's given away nothing to anyone. These people are thieves. The people running, the Sabbateans running the Jews are mafia thieves. And when we mention names like Shimon Peres, we forget he has no heart. He has no morality. This is a monster. And nobody understands. I'm not talking about a human being at the top of this mafia. These are really, really sick people. And until it's understood that the people running the Jews are all part of the CFR in America, and that includes Zuckerman, and it includes Bronfman, and it includes Siegman, and includes Lauder and Henlin, all these people leading the Jews are leading them to disaster, and it's being done on purpose. But the Jews can't accept it. And we're living in 1938 in a way that's just simply not understood by people, is that I'm in America, it's against my will, but the American Jews could not care less what happens to Israel. They don't want to know what's going on in that country, and it's that simple.
Well, most Americans don't want to know what's going on in the world either. Anyway, the Christians don't want to know. All they want to do is just, go to church and think they're going to be perfectly safe and whisked out of here, raptured out of here before anything bad happens. And I got news for them. I fear that an awful lot of Christians are going to become very, very disillusioned when they see what lies ahead.
Well, first of all, the Jews are going to lose their genetic stock.
Sure.
I mean, there's only 12 million Jews left in the world. They did an amazing job in getting rid of Jews. 6 million are in Israel, and I'm telling you, we're talking about a war to the finish. In a war to the finish, you have to defeat the army. They'll lose lots of men, but when that war comes, every woman in Israel is raped. Every child is raped, and then they're shot through the heads. What you're going to see is a Holocaust just as good They hate the Jews every bit as much as the Nazis hate the Jews. The only difference is the Arabs are emotional and will do the raping and killing with emotion, whereas the Nazis were Germans and they had no conscience whatsoever and just did the raping because they were told to. But neither here nor there, you're going to have the same thing happen again in Israel, because the Israeli state isn't ready for the kind of war that's about to be, well, foisted on it. Now, what Maury wrote about the time being right, do not underestimate how important that is. They will tell the Arabs when to attack. They will tell them when Israel is finished. That's what that meeting with Juan Carlos was, getting rid of Israel. And, of course, that's why Israel wasn't invited. But the Israeli people have no control over the government. They have no control over their army. I want to get my family out. I can't do it. I got to tell you, if it weren't for the brilliant thinkers that we have met today, Maury and Francisco and... And then, a researcher that I enjoy very much, Cynthia Adams Smith, and so forth. Without these people, I don't have any influence in this world. I'm getting very lucky in only one respect, that there are smart people like them and like you who understand that what I'm telling you is the exact truth. There's no funny stuff involved in this. And this is the exact truth, how they're going to bring Israel down. And it takes the Catholics to recognize that I've got something. And it takes the Jews, of course, to deny the truth of my message. And that's the way I'm afraid our history is. That's why Jews are so easy to kill. They get guys like me. They do a little mocking here and there. Or they get screwball professors working the Internet. They get the screwball government agents suing me. They do everything possible to knock me out of the scene. And it's the Catholics that may expose the Vatican in time. Right now, the Vatican's got enough problems just with pedophilia, let alone Israel. But nonetheless, it is these Catholic writers who are doing a better job than any Jewish writers I know right now.
Well, of course, I think it's going to be fascinating, because I really I've got an email this morning from a man who certainly has spent his whole life working for the CIA. Telling me, you know, that the war with Iran is coming, and he's talking within the next couple of months. The rumor that's out right now is that supposedly the two task force that are over there in the Persian Gulf, the Eisenhower and the John Stennis task forces, are to be relieved in the spring. In other words, they're going to bring in two more carrier task forces to relieve them, but it is believed that they will not be pulled out, and if that happens, we'll have four terrorist task forces over there, you know, just waiting for a couple of them to be hit. You know, apparently, our war games show that, that with small little torpedo boats, they could take out our carriers. So why are we bunching them all up to make it so easy for that to happen? And, of course, all we need is to have one of our carriers go down, and we will be plunged into a war with Iran, and then we will be plunged into a war with the Muslim world. So, and, of course, that will have tremendous repercussions as far as Israel, and will precipitate
this. Well, not
this.
The Muslim world. There's too many allies out there. You're not going to be plunged into war against Egypt or Saudi Arabia or Jordan or anything like that. You've got a problem with Syria and Iran, and that's what the war is all about.
Well, but I think, Barry, I think a lot of those countries are going to get overthrown, because they're not ruled by popular demand. They are ruled by vicious dictators that we are financing. And I will tell you, if they had a free and open election in Egypt today, the radical Islam would take it over. The same thing would be true with Turkey. The same thing would be true with Saudi Arabia and in Pakistan. So don't sell them short. I think that
I don't sell you short.
No, I'm sorry. The people on the other side, I think that they're planning already on just destroying the entire structure of the Middle East.
Well, I'm hearing this. I'm not selling it short. I'll accept anything. But I'll say one thing, though. It's very hard to overthrow a state, and it's getting harder every time. America's got itself allies. And these allies are all tied up with what is known as the New World Order, and they're playing ball with them. It's a messy, ugly world. I'm just concerned right now about Israel, and we've got a problem, and I'm going to go back to Hebron, because Hebron is gone. Now, I don't know if you've been watching that city for the past week, but they're now doing everything they always do when they destroy a city. They are religious symbols are being spread across the city into the synagogues. The destruction of Jesse's tomb took place. The murder of a visitor from Bat Ayin took place 2 days ago. And now here is my problem with the Jews. And it's a big problem. Condoleezza Rice was in Jerusalem. This was 4 days ago. On that day, the residents of Hebron decided to go out and protest. What the hell for? Who's going to notice a protest in Hebron? The woman is giving orders to throw out the Jews of Hebron. She's in Jerusalem, and these stupid Jews in Hebron have a rally of a couple hundred people. Condoleezza Rice's life is not in danger. And by the way, until they fear, until these New World Order types actually fear from the Jews of Israel, and quite frankly from anywhere, but that's all I care about right now, there's no chance to save that place. When Condoleezza Rice comes into Jerusalem, she's having a ball. She stays at the King David. The meals are private. No one gets in her way, and there is no one that's going to harm her. And this is the difference. The New World Order can harm as many people as they want. And boy, do they harm them by the millions. 60 million. In the last world war, but if one of them is harmed in any way, there were at least a dozen young religious kids, about half of them tied to the Rabin assassination, all shot dead by bullets or by swerving cars, all dead in the same week. There wasn't a left winger amongst them. They don't die. Only the right wingers who are protesting this government dies, and they are dying in droves right now. The war against religion is a horrible side effect that nobody is covering. Nobody. There's not one reporter in this country that has said there is an undeclared war against Israel's religious population, and they are killing these people off, and nobody is declaring that this is another war taking place within Israel between the Sabbateans and the religious, and the religious are losing. And all of this is really happening, and Hebron is really going to go down, and nobody is going to protest Condoleezza Rice in their capital, and Israel is just going to wave bye-bye, and that's it. They're just going to go down without a fight.
Well, of course, you and I, might disagree. I believe that without God's intervention, Israel is going to go down. But I'm betting on God, so... we'll wait to see what happens. We'll know, I think, probably within 3 months or so.
Not unless there's a reason. See, what I've been telling people is it won't take long to get the next round started. But this meeting in Spain was clearly to tell these Arabs, don't do it until we've got our job done. We get something out of this. For all the trouble, we're getting to Jerusalem, and that's final. There are things going on behind the scenes that, frankly, we don't know 1% of. But at least I'm pointing out to people, this is what's going on. Please take note that this meeting took place. I'm the only person in the world who reported it.
And how many foreign ministers were there?
I believe the figure was 19.
That's the figure I had as well. Isn't it amazing, because I read everything, and I haven't seen any mention of that other than to Barry Shamish, which is one reason I wanted you to hear what he had to say today. Barry, God bless you. We'll talk to you Friday evening at 8 o'clock on our Friday program.
You got a date. If there's any phone involved, give me a call later and tell me how to do it.
No, we'll call you. Don't you worry. Bye-bye.
See you later.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
More than 700 chemicals have been found in our drinking water. And did you know that you can have greater exposure to these chemicals by taking hot showers than when you drink the water? That's because many chemicals are inhaled when they evaporate, and others are absorbed through the skin. The KDF shower filter is designed to reduce chlorine, lead, mercury, and iron, and it inhibits the growth of bacteria, mold, algae, and fungus in your shower. The media is non-toxic, environmentally sound, and is recyclable. The KDF shower filter will typically last 10,000 gallons or 1 year, whichever comes first. Hospitals, restaurants, and water treatment facilities use this media to reduce chlorine, iron, heavy metals, and bacteria. What about you? Order your KDF shower filter, normally $49, for our special price of only $35, a $14 savings. Call now to order at 1-888-803-4438. Order today and save $14 by calling 1-888-803-4438.
Hey Jane, how's it going?
Gosh, I'm not doing so well. Even though I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do, my blood sugar is way out of control.
Oh, Jane, I'm sorry to hear that.
I have to monitor my blood sugar again. If there was only something natural I could take that would help control my blood sugar that really works.
Have you tried Sucroblast?
For millions of Americans who can't keep their high blood sugar levels off their minds, there's Sucroblast. Sucroblast is the all-natural way to help keep your high blood sugar levels under control. For a limited time, you can get a free consultation from a Sucroblast specialist. Call 1-800-99-HEALTHY. That's 1-800-99-HEALTHY. Or visit them on the web at MyBloodSugarBreakthrough.com. That's MyBloodSugarBreakthrough.com.
So, Jane, what do you think?
I'm going to call Sucroblast to set up a free consultation right now.
Excellent, Jane. He'll be glad you did.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and of course this is the time when I need you to remind you that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs to help us as we reach out 5 hours a day by radio and stations all across America on the Internet, and sometimes on two Internets, certainly by shortwave, and 4 hours a day by satellite, 9 hours a day on several satellites. Oh, but quite frankly, we need your help to maintain what we're doing and hopefully expand it. We have the opportunity for all sorts of other stations, but we pay for most of the stations we're on, and we would appreciate it if you'd give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to consider, for $20 a month or more, you'll get our four best tapes or CDs of the month. You'll get our monthly newsletter. You can subscribe to the newsletter for $25 a year, or whatever you can do, we'll certainly appreciate. Now, we hope you go to our website. We've got all sorts of books and four tape sets and videos, as many of them we produced ourselves. And then, of course, we carry, say, emergency food substances. And if you haven't laid in a supply or got yourself a water purifier or got yourself barrels or pumps and all those things that you're really going to need, because I think we're going to be moving into very difficult times, don't put it off. And whether you get it through us, whether you get it elsewhere, but move and get the things you would need tomorrow. You know, start thinking about it, and if you need lists, we'll be glad to provide them for you. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. There are all sorts of emergency lists out there. But the things that you ordinarily wouldn't even think of, you need to get, you need to have on hand, because we don't know what's going to happen, but everything points to the fact we're moving into World War III. And whether it'll happen in 3 months or 6 months or a year or 2 or 3 years, but behind everything going on are powerful spiritual forces that have been writing about this for a long period of time. And the Dravidians, another dimension, the pagan beliefs, the occult beliefs are spreading across America with a new DVD that's out there being featured by Larry King and Oprah Winfrey called The Secret, that of course is opening up people's minds to demonic possession all across America. And so understand that we're living in times where the tragedy is most Christians have no idea what's happening. They're firmly convinced nothing bad would ever happen to them. And I would tell you, if God is just, terrible things are going to happen to the Christian community. And go back and read Ezekiel 3 and Ezekiel 33 and see what happened to the children of Israel when they turned against God. And if you think for 1 minute America hasn't turned against God, you're sadly, sadly mistaken. Well, we do hope you will get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or the DVD or video that goes with that, or get the book, the video, and the audio tape that goes with that. That's the Brotherhood of Darkness special. We do hope that many of you will get my talk on Iraq, the untold story, in the syllabus, or on the hidden agenda about how they're poisoning us with fluoride, and the syllabus that actually gives you all the documentation on that, or a 4-tape set on sustainable development, or a video on sustainable development, or a syllabus on sustainable development, and understand the Earth Charter, which is the master plan of the occultists for a new spirituality. In fact, Marie Strong and Gorbachev, who wrote this Earth Charter, which we feature there, will tell you this is the new Ten Commandments. The old Ten Commandments are outdated. It's time for a new religion, a new spirituality, new spiritual beliefs. Some of the most wealthy and powerful people in the world are behind this movement to bring about the new world order and the new world religion. If you'd like a free copy of my newsletter, a catalog, if you'd like a health catalog, if you'd like an emergency food catalog, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and understand we're involved in the spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. All we can do, of course, is try to reach people and make them understand what's going on, and you can help us if you join the Radio Liberty family. We'll be back in just a moment with another great program.
Hello, folks. Alex Jones here, introducing Prudent Places USA, an interactive CD book that is your premier resource for hard-to-find information. Find out about everything from job migration to evacuation information, such as major bridges in disrepair and FEMA evacuation time studies for coastal cities. Zero in on man-made disaster zones, environmental areas of concern, and natural disaster zones.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guest. And today our guest is Don Piper, and he's written the most amazing book, 90 Minutes in Heaven. And I'm going to let him tell you his amazing story, because I can identify somewhat with it, because Mr. Piper had a number of... encounters with orthopedic surgeons, and having been an orthopedic surgeon many years myself, and I know what he went through. But I'm going to let him tell you this story and the impact that his accident had on the lives of so many people that he's encountered in the subsequent years. Don, thank you so very much for being with us this afternoon.
Well, thank you, Doctor. I'm very honored to be here. Yes, I have probably built several wings on a doctor's houses, put their kids through college, and a lot of other things. But, you know, it was worth it because I'm still here, and they put me back together again.
Well, it's really amazing what they can do and what good we can do. But I want you to tell the story of really what happened to you and how it all came about, how your life was transformed one evening when you were driving home.
Well, I was driving home from a conference. I've been a pastor for about 25 years, and like pastors and doctors and a lot of other things, you go to conferences from time to time to try to, you know, get a better education, learn new techniques, new things like that. I went to such a conference in East Texas in 1989, and on the way home from a conference, it was actually in the morning, about 11:45 in the morning on a rural highway in East Texas, crossing an old bridge, and an 18-wheeler tractor-trailer truck crossed the center stripe and hit my small car head-on, and I was actually dead on the scene of the accident, and horribly mangled in the result of the wreck. A small car and an 18-wheeler, those are not good odds, so I really was devastated by the accident, and indeed declared dead by four different sets of emergency medical technicians. Lay there in the car for quite some time under a tarp, waiting for some people to come and take the body away. And while that was happening, I had one of those remarkable encounters with heaven. I had heard about them. I didn't really believe. I never doubted the reality of heaven, but I did doubt that you could go there and come back and talk about it, even though I'd heard people claim to do that. And then one day, it happened to me, and I was able to get a glimpse of what heaven was like before I was returned to here to Earth through a long, long, long recovery and many operations.
Well, you want to just take, certainly, your experience in heaven is not the major thrust of the book, but do you want to just briefly tell us what you experienced, what you remember about that experience?
I will. I was immediately standing at the gates of heaven upon impact. The truck was driving about 65, and I was driving about 50, so that's 115 miles an hour of impact. And there was no delay. I didn't go through a long tunnel. There was no sense of light at the end of it. I was just immediately there. It was such a sudden death that I was immediately surrounded by people that I had known and loved in life who had preceded me, and they just all looked marvelous. There's a stark contrast between the shape I was in when I returned and how wonderful everyone looked there, and including myself. I didn't have any scars on me, and I have many of them now. So it was just wonderful to see these people who had helped me get to heaven. In fact, they had told me about how to get there. They shared Christ with me, and they had taken me to church, and
all right, you hold that thought, and we're going to be back here in just a moment as we're going to pull some other stations on board here. We'll be back in just a moment.
Thanks.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Don Piper, who had been a minister for well over 20 years when he was involved in an automobile accident in Texas, and his car was hit head-on by a great big truck, and he was declared dead. In fact, he was declared dead by a number of the medics who came, and they just covered the body up with a tarp until until they could actually get some means of prying the body out of the car, because he was dead. And he had you call it an out-of-body experience, call it what you will, but he actually went to heaven. So you pick up the story there, and he is standing before the pearly gates of heaven waiting for entry, and really what a peaceful experience it is. Now, of course, his body is in the car, he's dead, everybody knows he's dead. You go on from there, Don.
Right, it was a breathtaking experience to be there. I mean, the contrast between the condition I was in, the body was in the car, and the perfection that is heaven itself could not be any more stark. I was surrounded by all these people, as I said, that I've known and loved in life, and they were there to greet me, and they were just breathtakingly beautiful and perfect, and there really were gates made of pearl. It was like the inside of an oyster. The light there is so utterly brilliant that it almost appears as if the gate is alive, but it's really just the light reflecting off the gate. And there really are streets that I see that appear as gold. I had someone email me the other day and said that they didn't really think that was possible because God wouldn't be that materialistic. But they really, you know, God can make heaven out of whatever He chooses. He's God. So it was golden. There were golden streets. There were pearly gates. There was incredible music, such as I've never heard here on earth. I mean, I've heard some things similar to it, but it wasn't just the quality of the music. It was the quantity. There were a myriad of songs being rendered at the same time, and yet there was no chaos. I could distinguish each one of the songs with my heavenly ears, and there were the sound of wings, as if angels were hovering all about, and I'm sure that they were. So heaven, I often say, was a buffet for the senses. It was a sensory explosion of sight and sound and aroma and touch. It's the most real experience I've ever had in my existence. And believe me, you know, I had a life before the accident, and I've had an extraordinary life since, involving many operations, 34 major surgeries.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Don just described really what he experienced when he went to heaven. But back on Earth, why a minister has stopped, and for some reason he decided he was going to go up and pray. So you tell the story.
He did indeed. Since many of us were returning from the same conference in this rural area at a retreat center, and the accident actually happened on a bridge over a lake, the traffic was backed up for miles, and backed up in that traffic were a number of other pastors. One pastor and his wife walked actually up to the bridge and asked if he could be of any assistance. Was there anyone there that he might be able to pray for? And he was told no, although there were other vehicles involved in the accident. Nobody else was hurt, including the truck driver. But he was told that I was dead, so there was no reason to pray for me. But God spoke to him in a very dramatic, clear way. God just said, pray for the man in the red car. That would have been me. The car I was driving was a red Escort. And so he asked for permission to get in the car and pray for me, and was denied because of how awful the car was. Just shards of metal and broken glass, and I was just hideously deformed under this tarp that they had covered me up with. And they finally relented, and since he had been a medic in Vietnam and he was a pastor, they said, all right, you can go over and pray until the coroner gets here, and when he does, you'll have to leave. So got in the car and started praying for me, even though he knew I was deceased. And, of course, I'm in heaven while this is all going on. I'm oblivious of what's happening on the bridge. And after about 90 minutes from the moment of the accident, which was 11:45 a.m., at 1:15 in the afternoon, he's singing a hymn over my body, an old hymn called What a Friend We Have in Jesus. And as he's singing this hymn, suddenly there under the tarp in the dark, even though it's the middle of the day, it's dark because we're both covered up, he's singing that hymn, What a Friend We Have in Jesus, and suddenly, without any warning at all, I started singing with him under the tarp. And not only was he shocked, he went over and told the authorities, who really didn't believe him at all. He finally had to plead with them to come and check on me one more time, and when they did, they discovered that I was alive again, not very alive. I was horribly injured, but alive enough to try to save me, and so they ordered additional equipment and then tried to extract me from the car. That took quite some time.
And so then, of course, the next thing you know, you're in the hospital.
Right, yes. Yeah, the accident happened at 11:45 in the morning. Because it was such a rural area, because they had such difficulty getting me out of the car, even though my head had been crushed, I was impaled on the steering wheel, my left leg had been severed just above the knee, my left arm had been severed halfway between the wrist and the elbow, They were going to life flight me by helicopter, but the weather was very, very bad, and the helicopters were not able to take off that day. So they transported me eventually about 80 miles to a level one trauma center in Houston, and I arrived there from an accident that happened at 11:45 in the morning. I arrived at the hospital at 6:15 p.m. that evening.
And then begins this long ordeal with orthopedic surgeons as they begin to try to reconstruct your shattered body.
Yes. Very difficult, very painful, very touch and go for quite some time. I was in the ICU for 14 days initially and developed a double pneumonia and really lapsed into critical, even grave condition at that point. Since my left leg was in traction because 4 inches of femur was missing, so, and my left arm was also missing bones, I was not able to be elevated to treat the pneumonia, so they had to make a decision as to how they were going to either remove the leg or do something else. They decided to place a bone growth device. In 1989, this was very new technology, especially on the femur. They made the decision to do that, and it was about a 10-hour surgery on that in my arm. And then after that, I was able to be elevated, and they began to treat me for the pneumonia. And I gradually, very gradually, began to get better, was eventually transferred to another room. But subsequently, as I said earlier, I had 34 major operations to reassemble my left leg, my left arm, and my right leg.
Yeah, because they had to put in the bone grafts and this is just such a long slope.
It is.
And it's such a painful process. And apparently, you were really, really pretty depressed about the whole thing and pretty miserable.
I was. Doctors are, a lot of folks expect them to be miracle workers, and in many ways, that is exactly what they are. They take the human body, and sometimes it's horribly mangled and terribly deformed, and the tragic injuries, and yet they're often so able to put it back together because of the healing power, in my opinion, not only of the human body, but of God himself. And so they were able to do that, but months in the hospital, I was in a hospital bed for 13 months. I just really hit the bottom. This fixator, external fixator on my left leg, was on there almost a year, and that involved turning screws 4 times a day to stretch the bones that are inside to try to close the gap of a missing bone. The bones in my forearm are actually bone transplants from my right pelvis. All the skin on my left arm actually came from my right leg. So in many ways, my anatomy has been completely rearranged. But over those months, it's such a slow process and such a painful ordeal to have these rods embedded in your flesh and through the bones and out the other side, and halos all around your legs and arms, that I just kind of lost hope that I would ever be able to function again in any kind of meaningful way. And I just kind of hit the bottom in terms of depression and hope. I didn't doubt that I would continue to live, but I did doubt that I would ever have any kind of meaningful ministry again. And that was very difficult. A good portion of the book, 90 Minutes in Heaven, is about the recovery process that it took for me emotionally, physically, and even spiritually to kind of get back on my feet and learn to walk again, which in many cases was very much in doubt in the early days, and also to have any kind of meaningful ministry and meaningful life. And that's what the struggle is about. I call that a new normal, because sometimes things happen to us, we will never be the same as we were before the tragedy or the loss or the event. And I had to find a new normal, otherwise I don't think I would have been able to continue.
Well, my wife read the book, your book, before I read it. One of the things she commented on was that at one time, of course, you didn't want anybody to help you. People would come,
yes,
that want to help, that want to do something for you. And your whole response was, no, I don't want anybody to do anything for me.
That's correct. Well, it was selfish, actually. And ironically, I thought it was selfless. I really thought I was trying to relieve them of any responsibility to take care of me. I really felt terrible about people driving one way, 40 miles just to see me in the hospital, or spending time, going down and bringing magazines. And they were trying to do the best they could to try to make my life a little bit better, but I just resisted that. I just I just felt awful that they were having to do so many things for me. And I was a 39-year-old man who was utterly helpless. I had to depend on other people to do everything for me. I simply could not do anything for myself at all. And so I kind of closed other people out, and that was really the disaster. It not only was I depriving them of the opportunity to help me, but I was taking away their ministry. As a minister, I'd been helping people all my lives in tragic situations, in difficult circumstances. Here I was, the victim, and they were trying to help me, and I was denying them what I would like to call a blessing. I mean, all they wanted to do was something simple. Bring me a glass of water. Bring me a milkshake. I lost 80 pounds, and they were concerned about that. And they wanted to bring me magazines or something. And every time they tried to do that, I'd say, no, thank you. I don't need anything. And I really learned a valuable lesson about it's not about me. Sometimes when people want to help you, it's about them. It's a blessing for them. They feel like they're making a difference. When you deny them the chance to do that, you're really taking away their ministry. And some people really helped me see that, and that was one of the biggest lessons I had as a result of this experience was I just needed to learn to let people care for me and love me the only way they could. And when I learned that lesson, I think it's one of the most important things I learned as a result of being so incapacitated and so deeply hurt. Was how much people really loved me and wanted to care for me. And when I allowed them to do that, it made them happy too.
Well, I think something as dramatic and really as traumatic as you had, it many ways makes you have to be totally dependent upon God, because there's nothing you can do. You're just totally helpless. And
I was.
All of us, of course, want to think that we're going to be able to run the world or make it a better world. And here you're in a situation, you're totally helpless, and you're totally dependent on others and totally dependent upon God.
Couldn't do a thing for myself. Nothing. If there was any way I was going to be able to overcome this, it was going to be through the help and prayers of those people who love me and care for me, and God himself. So many of the things that happened to me were beyond any of our abilities to overcome them, even the finest physicians and the finest medical care. There were just miracles. A lot of the things were miracles. I mean, when you lose 4 inches of femur, of course we know the largest bone in the human body, it's just extraordinarily difficult to do anything for that. There's just no other bone in the body that replaces it. I sometimes jokingly say, if an archaeologist finds my body 500 years from now, they're going to think they found the missing link, because, you know, everything's been rearranged inside of me. Bones are regrown and transplanted and fused and all sorts of things. So it's a God thing. God was with me all the way, and even through the dark days, I could feel his presence. And now I walk unassisted and function strictly because of all the miracles that happened.
All right, we're going to be back in just a couple of moments with Don Piper. His book is 90 Minutes in Heaven, and it's a wonderful read. It really is a book that will touch your very heart, and so we are going to be carrying the book. We think it's an important message. A lot of times you listen to our programs, you hear a lot of bad news about what's going on in the world, but here's a story of courage and of sacrifice, but also of faith. And we'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Don Piper, and we're talking about his book, 90 Minutes in Heaven. And of course, the interesting thing about the book is most of it is not about the 90 minutes in heaven. It's about the impact of his injury on his family, on himself, and on so many of the people he came in contact with in the hospital, and then how he was able to utilize this experience to touch other people's lives afterwards. So do you want to sort of expand on that idea? Because that to me was the most touching part of the book, really, how you were able to utilize what you'd been through to help you identify with people who are going through similar experiences.
Doctor, that's really the reason I wrote the book. I did have the heaven experience, and it's glorious. Heaven is real. It's the most real thing I've ever experienced, and people seem to delight to know that to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. But I wrote the book to try to be as helpful as I could to people who are having troubles now, and maybe physical troubles, emotional troubles, spiritual troubles. It's really the reason I agreed to write it, because I waited for 14 years after the accident to even discuss this, because if I talked about even the heaven part, it meant that I had to relive the wreck, and it's not something I really wanted to do. But it seemed to matter in ways to people that I didn't even think about before I wrote the book. So I sat down and wrote the book, and I often say I'm not the hero of this book. Not only is it a story of God's healing power, but it's a story of a great love and great affection and great care provided by a lot of other heroes. My wife, my children, my parents, my wife's parents, a church family that stood by us and came to stay with me every day and took care of us, and mowed our lawn, and did all those things that you just never think about until there's not someone there to do it. So they're the heroes of the story, and I wanted people to know that there is life after tragedy, even though it may not be the same as it was before. There is life after loss, and you just need to be prepared to find the new way to live your life. And so I discussed that extensively, and also the doors and the ministry that God has opened as a result of what happened to me that I never would have been able to experience. When I go to a hospital now and hold somebody's hand and go to see them and pray for them, they know, I know, what it feels like to be in the hospital bed. I was in one for 13 months. They know I know what it feels like to hurt and to be in such agony and pain as to want to pass out because I was there. And so a lot of those things, God has taken the tragedy and difficulty that I experienced, and he's given me a whole new perspective on ministering to people who are going through the same thing. And that's why I wrote the book, and that's why I travel and speak about it. Not something I ever planned to do, but I find when I take the emphasis off of me and try to help somebody else, it actually helps me. I mean, I don't move around very well. I still have some very debilitating things that there are a lot of things I'll never be able to do physically again. But I'm going to keep going until I can't go anymore. I want to help people get through tragedy and loss and difficulties, and you don't have to go very far to find them. They're everywhere.
They certainly are. There's so many tragedies and so many orthopedic tragedies and
yes.
So many people, you know, who are really being put into these various orthopedic frames are a little bit more sophisticated now. But they're still bulky, they're still painful, and of course it's still a terrifying experience, and we'll be right back here.
It is.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Don Piper. He's a minister, and of course we're talking about his book, 90 Minutes in Heaven. The thing about the book is it's not primarily about the accident or the time in heaven. It's about the impact of the accident on Don's life. And then as he writes the book, how this book has really helped so many other people, you know, to relate to their own illness. So certainly you tell many, many stories in your book about, you know, dealing with people who going through similar things. Would you like to tell a few of those stories?
Well, it's interesting. I went to a youth conference about a year and a half or so after I was in the accident, and by this time they had the frames removed. I often tell people that having a frame on you, and I'm never quite sure how to pronounce this doctor's name. It's either Elizarov or Elizarov, the guy that invented these external fixators in Siberia. You have one of these things on you. It's like having ice picks buried in your skin down to the bone. That's what they're like. The remarkable thing is they work. I mean, they restored about 3 or so inches of bone in my left leg as a result of this device. So you don't see them very often, but when you do, you know it must hurt. I saw a young man at a conference I attended about a year and a half after my accident. I was not walking very well by that time, but I was at least able to move. And I had arrived late because of some other circumstances, and I was not feeling too well and kind of feeling sorry for myself for having to climb a lot of steps, and I don't do steps very well. I climbed up the top of this auditorium, and I just happened to glance over and see a young man with one of the frames on his leg. And he was there were lots of youth there, young people, and they were cheering, and they were very loud and quite boisterous, as young people like to do. but not him. He had his face buried in his hands, and he looked like, for all the world, that he was just devastated. And so I just felt drawn to him. I walked over there to where he was and said, that thing really hurts, doesn't it? And he looked at me like, of course it hurts. Look at it. And I said, I had one on my leg, and that changed everything. He said, you did? And I said, yes, I did. I just got it off about 6 months ago. And he says, I don't think I'm going to be able to stand this. I don't think I can go on. I said, I know. I thought the same thing day after day, week after week after week, until he took it off. And I said, but you noticed something. He said, what? I said, I walked over here to where you are. One of these days they're going to take that thing off and you'll be able to walk again. Well, he began to weep. He's about 17 years old. And I just kind of just leaned over to put my arm around him. And I said, look, I want to give you my phone number. And anytime you want to call me, you have finally found somebody who knows how you feel. Everybody else has been nice and encouraging, but I understand how you feel. And you can call me anytime you want to. And I gave him my numbers, and we struck up a relationship over the months that followed until he finally got that thing removed and went into therapy, which takes quite a long time. So divine appointments like that have been legion. They still happen all the time. Even since I've written that book, many, many things have happened. I do have a new book out, incidentally. It's called Daily Devotions, inspired by 90 Minutes in Heaven. And it contains a lot of stories about just those sorts of things, opportunities I've had to minister to people that I never would have had I not had been in the accident and gone through such a long recovery period.
And I think the question we all have is, how could God allow this to happen? How could God allow this to happen to me?
Right. Well, I understand that, because people are grappling with the whys of it all. I never really thought much about why the big truck hit me. I know under no terms that the truck driver was not trying to hurt somebody that day. He merely was driving too fast. He came down an embankment at a high rate of speed. He lost control of his truck. He ran into me. You know, could God have prevented it? Of course he could have. He's God. Why didn't he prevent it? Well, who's to say? It may have been that I needed to learn these lessons. It may have been that, and I find this to be the case, it's not so much what happens to us in life. It has more to do with what do we do what happens to us. I mean, how do we process that? How do we take those circumstances? Because into every life is tragedy and difficulty. If you live long enough, you're going to lose somebody you love. You're probably going to be ill. Somebody that you take care of or you care about, they're going to be ill. You might get fired from your job, but you might have a child who's going through a horrible experience, or a parent. So you really have to process these things. It's not so much what happens and who caused it. It's what do we do with what happens to us. God does have a permissive will. He does allow things to happen. Does he do it on purpose? I don't think that may be relevant, but I don't really see it. I think it's the process of dealing with the issue, dealing with the loss, dealing with the circumstances that grows us. There's one of the great writers of the Bible, Paul, asked God to remove what he called a thorn in the flesh from him. Apparently, he had some very painful circumstances, and God chose not to do that. And
hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Pastor John Piper, and we're talking about his book, 90 Minutes in Heaven. It's a touching book. It's a book that will have an emotional impact upon anybody who reads it. And certainly had an impact upon my wife, and it had an impact upon me, and I'm sure it's had an impact upon, you know, really hundreds of thousands of people. There are over a million copies in print, aren't there, somewhere there?
Last week, there have been a million and a half copies of 90 Minutes in Heaven sold.
In fact, it was really surprising. My wife was able to get a copy at Costco, which is one of the largest distributors, I hear, at least on the West Coast, a discount store. And they were featuring it, big piles of them. And so, of course, they sell it cheaper than everybody else.
Yes.
My wife went ahead and picked one up, and And certainly, she got that from me. She wouldn't let me have her copy. Anyway, it's really a very, very touching and a book that I think certainly, well, we're going to be carrying the book simply because we think it's an important book. We really want people to hear your message, and really, it's one of hope and really simply of redemption after a terrible, terrible accident. And of course, you're back in the ministry full time now, aren't you?
I am. I'm not serving a local church anymore. Remarkably, people want to hear and see the person who experienced this. It's interesting. I speak in churches really literally all over the world now. It's in 17 different languages beyond English, and so I travel fairly extensively. And frankly, that's not an easy thing for me to do. I don't travel that well because of my injuries. There is still a result of my injuries. But people want to see you walk on the stage. They've read the book, and they want to see what has been able to happen as a result of all the surgeries and all the therapy and all those other kinds of things. So I do travel now and speak at churches really from coast to coast. And I'm just in town for 3 days before I take off again. And it's been very gratifying to meet people and to hold the hands of people who are going through, in some ways, the very similar things that I've gone through, and to encourage them that they can overcome it. They can snap back. They won't be the same, probably, but they don't have to be. I often say I've been beaten, but I'm not. I've been beaten up, but I've not been beaten. I've been knocked down, but I haven't been knocked out. So I try to help people know that even if you've been knocked down, you don't have to be knocked out.
And of course, it certainly is a book that has a promise of hope for everybody who's going through a similar circumstance. Yeah, we'll be right back here in a moment. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest is Don Piper. His book, 90 Minutes in Heaven. And of course, we're going to be carrying the book. We think it's important. If you'd like to get a copy of the audio tape that goes with this program, I think it will help you. But how do you have a website or any information you'd like to get out about your ministry?
Yes, Doctor. I have a website called 90MinutesInHeaven.com, and my main website is DonPiperMinistries.com. DonPiperMinistries.com. If they log on to 90MinutesInHeaven.com, they'll see an actual streaming video of me talking about the book. The other website is biographical, and there's some other information about me, some photos of me and the accident and things like that. So Don Piper Ministries would be the primary website.
All right. Well, if you're out there in the audience and you have a question for Reverend Piper, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And now, Chris, as you talk to people across America, I suppose a lot of them are really more interested in the 90 minutes in heaven than the rest of the story. And yet, of course, the major part of the story is not certainly the time in heaven, although that's fascinating. I think that's really what intrigues everybody. But what really intrigued me most was your response to the accident and then the impact that your accident had on other people. Would that be a fair estimate?
That's correct, Doctor. The book is a very unvarnished book. You might imagine I autograph many copies of books. When I hand somebody, I never hand the book to someone and say, I hope you enjoy this book. I would caution people that it's not a book that is to be enjoyed. It's very graphic. It's unvarnished. I certainly don't come across as very heroic at all in this situation, because I didn't handle it very well often during the recovery period. But I found almost an equal number of people buy the book because they want to know about heaven and they're excited about going there, or maybe they've recently lost a loved one. But I also encounter many, many people, maybe as many if not more, who just want to know. They want hope. You use the right word. They want hope that you can have a meaningful life even after you've gone through a life-changing experience, which is certainly what I did. I was just a pastor on his way to church. I wasn't doing something I shouldn't have done, or I wasn't going somewhere I shouldn't have gone. And so it can happen to anyone at any time. time, and they want to know, how do you survive this? How do you overcome this? And they want some hope, and that's what I was looking for. I was looking for some hopeful information and some hopeful words, and it took me a long time to find them. I decided that when I got over this and I was able to move again, I was going to try to be someone who offered other people hope simply by just, as I said, walking in the room and having them see what it's like to walk, even if you've been told you'll never walk again.
Would you mind taking a couple of questions? We have a couple.
Sure.
We have one from Mary is calling us from New York. Hi, Mary. How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
Do you have a question for our guest?
I've heard that you go to paradise because the thief on the cross went to paradise.
Yes.
So I've often wondered, is paradise and heaven the same thing?
You know, that's a great theological question. Some folks use those words interchangeably, paradise and heaven, and some would say that paradise is almost a kind of an interim period, a place that's kind of a way station between now and heaven. What I saw would certainly be paradise, but I have a tendency to think I was standing outside the gates of heaven. Now, I did not cross through the gates, because as I was about to enter in the gates, the gentleman was praying over me back in the car, at least praying over the body, and about the time I was about to step through, I found myself back in the car in the dark with him singing over me and the body. So I didn't have that privilege. In a way, I'm kind of glad I didn't, because when I came back, what I missed, what I saw and then lost, really affected me in a very negative way. Not because I enjoyed it very much, and I was thrilled to see what I... But then I lost it, and it I was in such bad shape physically, having lost heaven and then coming back here really didn't help me too much. Now I have a better understanding of why I came back. But I have a tendency to think I was in heaven, and the paradise thing really is more of a subject for theologians to discuss in terms of the first heaven and the second heaven and the third heaven and paradise. What I saw was most heavenly, and it was quite breathtaking. I can't wait to go back there.
Anything else, Mary?
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, I've heard of the stories where people have gone to hell and come back. And
yes, I have too.
Pretty scary.
And we have a wonderful 14th set called Whatever Happened to Hell, which is interviews with a doctor.
Indeed.
Who took care of many people who had had that negative experience.
Is that Dr. Maurice Rawley?
Yes, wonderful, wonderful 14th.
He's a wonderful person, I really was stunned and overwhelmed by his study. It's quite amazing.
But anyway, thank you so much for calling, Mary.
Thank you
so much.
Well, let's go to Mike, who's calling us from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi, Stan. I wanted to grapple, if I could, along with you, with that question of why did God allow this to happen? When you ask the question about one event, such as your guest had, you kind of have to ask about another and another and all of them and all through history, and it goes back to the Garden of Eden. Why did God even allow that?
Yes.
The fall in the garden. Well, God, in the chapter before chapter 3, chapter 2 of Genesis, he says, the day you eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you shall surely die.
Right.
So, earth life became a place where death happens.
Yes, it does.
Bad things happen here on this earth, and God says to look to him and to look to his son, the source and the author and the finisher and the perfecter of life.
Well said.
Yeah, we're stuck with death. We're going to have to live with things like this.
Right.
And God, on occasion, will tend to give us an escape route. Or, we never know what God prevented from happening.
That's correct.
In our life.
Yes. We have a tendency to think of it the other way. You're right, sir.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And so in the final analysis, the answer really is to look to Christ. I know... a lot of people in the middle of something right now aren't going to think that's much of an answer. But this is earth life, and this is what we got.
We're living that way now, correct. And
yeah,
God
okay.
does allow them to happen, but that doesn't mean he caused it to happen.
Right.
Thanks so much, Mike. And I guess the answer I would think would be between man's plan in time and God's plan in eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference, and a lot of things we're never going to understand here on Earth. We try to understand, but we're really incapable of understanding it.
Well, it's kind of like describing heaven, what you mentioned earlier. We have no choice when we're trying to describe heaven but to describe it in earthly terms, and it is not an earthly place.
Amen to that.
So when we try to describe it, people say, well, now, they ask more questions because they want to know more. And you get to the point where you can't describe it anymore because it's not like this place where we live, and the words that we have here on earth don't do it justice.
Well, I thought that one of the more interesting parts of it, your story was that you're laying there in the bed, you've got constant pain, you've got all these frames all over you,
right.
You're totally helpless, and you're thinking, I wish I was up in heaven.
Yes. Oh, all the time, yes. And I didn't tell anybody about it until long after I had been discharged from the hospital and got the frames off, and I just didn't, and then it was almost an accident. I just kind of let it slip out of the conversation to my best friend, and his response was, why do you think you saw that if you weren't supposed to talk about it? Don't you think people would be benefited, they would benefit by knowing that heaven is real from somebody who's been there? I didn't have a good answer for that question, but I still avoided talking about it for a long time. And when he finally convinced me to do it, and others did, it seemed to really help people, and so in spite of my not really wanting to go back and relive the accident, I'm doing it, and it does seem to help. So I'm going to do it as long as the Lord allows.
And just really the terrible impact this had on your wife. Your wife had to go to work, and
yes.
You know, the kids had to give up so much.
Right.
Just really your whole life was shattered.
And
there was very little, you had very little compensation. Apparently,
there was none. It was a state truck. The truck was owned by the State Department of Corrections, and it was driven by an inmate. So there was no, states and local governments, and I guess even the federal government are considered federally insured, so they have a pool of resources they allot for these kinds of things, and my doctor bills were in the millions, and the money that was awarded went to pay that, and so neither I nor my family received any compensation at all for having suffered through all this.
Well, of course, nobody ever said that life was fair.
Nope.
But in many respects, you probably touched far more lives than most ministers ever would have the opportunity, and far more lives than you ever would have simply been working in a church.
See, if you'd have told me that when I was lying in the bed, I don't think that would have even registered on me. I would have thought, well, I don't think it's still worth the trade-off. Look at me. You know, look at all these wounds. Look at all this. But I understand it better now because I look into the faces of people who are really hurting. I spent some time a few months ago with a pilot who was the sole survivor of a plane crash. And his family called me because they'd read the book. And here I am holding the hand of this pilot. He's the only one that survived the plane crash in Kentucky. And I'm standing there with him because he's about to lose one of his legs. And they knew that I had lost mine and they put it back on. And I'm thinking, now, I wouldn't be here had I not gone through the experience that I went through. And they felt like I was the only one that could help him. Well, I don't know if that was true, but I'm the first one they called because they wanted somebody who could speak to him based on the pain and the suffering and the long-term recovery he was going through. So God's opened a lot of doors. They're not doors I would have gone through under any other circumstances. I'm just trying to be faithful, but it is overwhelming sometimes. It truly is.
And, of course, one of the most touching parts of the story was the story about the gentleman who was in the car, crushed car, and he's holding your hand.
Yes.
Why don't you tell that story?
Well, Dick Honorecker was the name of the pastor who got in the car with me, and I felt that when I came back, I knew I was holding a hand. And as it turned out, I had told the story that way on a number of occasions about crawling in the car and getting under the waterproof tarp with me because it was raining and they were trying to keep the rain off the body. He's holding on to my hand. That's the way I told the story. Over a year and a half after the accident, I was wearing leg braces and learning to walk again. I was invited to go to speak in his church. He also was a pastor. So I'm told the story about him holding my hand and him praying for me. We finished, we went to lunch, his wife leaned over and she said, I need to correct something you said in your story today. And I said, well, what on earth did I say that wasn't true? She said, you said that Dick was in the car under the tarp holding onto your hand as he was praying for you. And I said, yes, I distinctly remember that. She said he was in the car under the tarp praying for you, but he had his hand on your right shoulder because that's the only thing he could touch. Everything else was either crushed or dismembered. Your right hand was actually lying on the passenger side floor of the car because you were slumped over. no one, he didn't hold your hand. And I said, well, I felt someone holding my hand. And he said, she said, of course someone was holding your hand, but it wasn't my husband. And then I knew that God had really sent, I mean, I was attended there in the car by angels who were watching over me in spite of my devastating injuries. The decision had been made for me to survive, and I was being comforted and encouraged and strengthened by his angels.
That, to me, was one of the most touching parts of the entire story.
Well, it was a revelation. I didn't find out until long after it happened that that was what was happening, and it was to say that it encouraged me and moved me and really convicted me is an understatement. I've never looked at things quite the same again. The Bible says we never know when we're entertaining angels unaware, but I hadn't expected to entertain one on a bridge in the middle of nowhere following a wreck, but that's what happened that day.
And I'm sure that often when you go into a hospital room or you hold somebody's hand, I know that because it's sort of a means of communicating with
them. It is. It is indeed. That's a good observation. That's exactly the way you feel when that's happening. And it's what I call a holy moment. And you know that that only God can bring you through this trying, difficult circumstance. And so that's what I live for. I live for opportunities like that.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question for Pastor Don Piper, who really has written a wonderful, touching book, which I hope that many people in the audience will want to get, it's entitled 90 Minutes in Heaven. And, of course, one of the amazing things as well is that after all the time he was dead, he came back with no brain damage at all. Isn't that true?
That's exactly right. I think that's probably one of the most remarkable aspects of this whole thing, having had my head crushed by the roof of the car when the wheels of the truck went over the top of it. He literally went over the top of the car, and the roof came down on my head. My heart had stopped bleeding, of course, but I had blood coming out of my eyes and ears and nose, all classic indications of serious brain damage. And, of course, you know, I was gone for 90 minutes, so you know that the brain would long since be dead. So there's just really no earthly explanation for all the things that happened there in that car. It had to be a miraculous occurrence. And sometimes I don't feel very miraculous, you know, when the body doesn't function very well. But it was miraculous, and there were many, many more miracles. One of the things the book chronicles is the startling number of circumstances and miracles that had to happen for me to survive this horrendous crash and to function to the extent that I do today. So I believe God's still in the miracle business, and my life is a living testimony to that.
Well, I think that he is as well, and certainly there's no better way to see it than in the regained lives of people who've been in these terrible accidents, who in past years would certainly have perished or never been able to get up and around again. But
correct.
And of course, you know, we want God to do things just the way that we want Him. We want to be just like the way we were before.
Right. And in some ways, that's just not going to happen. And that's where the rub is. That's where people have problems. When that happens, they become angry, and they become bitter, and they become defiant. And I understand all those emotions, but it's not until you begin to see the opportunities in that tragedy and loss and circumstances that you begin to not only overcome it, but you begin to have another reason. I mean, it may be a completely new reason for living that you hadn't thought of before you got hurt or you experienced the loss. I think that's the key right there, is to turn that page and stop being bitter and start being better.
Amen to that. Well, this is a very, very touching, a very powerful book. It's a sort of book that you just don't forget. In fact, as I mentioned earlier, my wife has her copy of the book, and I have my copy of the book. And she was about to let me mark up her copy. And of course, when I read a book, I make all sorts of lines and yellow lines and notes in the back of it so I can go through and just pull out the significant things of what happened. Well, when we get back here, of course, we'll tell our listeners how to certainly get copies of the book. Would you like, though, to get your web pages out just one more time?
Yes, the webpages are 90minutesinheaven.com and donpiperministries.com. If you're looking for more information about where I'm going to be or the books, you want to log on to the 90 Minutes in Heaven. I mean, you would want to log on to Don Piper Ministries website. The 90 Minutes in Heaven is some streaming video of me talking about the book and appearing on some television.
All right, fine. Of course, we recommend the book. We recommend that. And I think you'll find it'll be very, very beneficial. Well, we've got about 2.5 minutes for you to wrap up the program. So what would be the final message you'd like to leave with our listeners today?
Well, based on the experience that I had that day, as a pastor just headed back to his church to do a Wednesday night worship service, and having had this thing happen to me, this great accident, this life-changing experience, I've concluded a few things unequivocally. Number one, I believe God answers prayer. The reason I survived that accident that day is because not only did the man crawl in the car with me and begin to pray over me, but other people, thousands of other people, were praying too when they heard about the accident. So I think my life is a testimony to answer prayer. I think it's also a testimony to miracles. There's just so many things that happened for me to survive that had to be miraculous for me to happen, for me to be here. I do believe sometimes bad things happen to us. We have to process that and find a new normal, a new way to live our lives that's not going to be the way it was before, but it can be better. It can actually make a difference in the lives of other people. And then finally, I believe heaven is real. It's the most real place I've ever been. And I've discovered in my life that the way to heaven is through Christ. And I went to heaven because I knew him, and I'm going back. I just want to try to take as many people with us as we can when we all come to that time in our life when our earthly life ends. Where will we be? Heaven is real. Hell is real. Heaven is where you want to be.
Amen to that. And I think it's so important that, especially in times like this, that people understand that, you know, any one of us could die tomorrow, and if we were to die, where would we spend eternity? That is the most important question we can ask.
It is.
All right, fine. Well, thank you very much, Don. I really appreciate it with it. I hope maybe when you get back from your travels, we can get you onto some of our other programs.
I would be honored to do that, and may the Lord bless you in your program there and all the things you do.
God bless. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
All right, fine. Well, our guest today was Don Piper. His book is a touching and powerful testimony of how the hand of God can preserve our lives and can preserve us. Things may not work out exactly as we'd like them to work out, but they do work out. And certainly, out of the terrible, terrible experience, why Don's ministry was changed, and he has had a chance to touch far more lives than he ever would have, simply being confined in one church and talking to one congregation. He speaks to people all over the world today, and we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest today was Don Piper. His book is 90 Minutes in Heaven, and of course, we are going to be carrying the book. It's not that expensive. It's a powerful, powerful book that will really touch your life. And let me suggest you consider getting a copy of the tape of this program or CD of the program as well, and I think you can identify with it. But it's the sort of book that really is inspirational and will touch your lives and touch the lives of so many other people who read it. And then, of course, we were talking, what about the idea of hell? Is there a hell? Well, we have a great 4-tape set, which we sell very, very infrequently. Whatever happened to hell? But there's interviews with a Dr. Rollins, who was a cardiologist who actually really wasn't a Christian until one day one of his people he was working with died. He just played out died, and he tried to resuscitate him, and eventually was able to resuscitate him, and the man came back, and he was frightened to death. He was frightened because he had gone to the other side. And of course, the book recalls a number of experiences that Dr. Rawlings had with people who went to hell. So on one side we hear the story of heaven, on the other side we hear the story of hell. We think it's really a powerful, powerful 2-hour tape, and it is 2 hours of interviews with Dr. Kathy Burns on hell. So we have to understand we have a choice. We're either going to go to heaven or we're going to go to hell, and there's no place in between. And if you were to die tomorrow, where would you spend eternity? We hope that you'll want to get a copy of John Piper's book, 90 Minutes in Heaven. And if you'd like to get a tape of the or CD of the program, they are available. We hope you want to get our story of Whatever Happened to Hell. It's a four-tape set, and there's a little pamphlet that you can get for that as well on hell, because Jesus spoke far more of hell than he did of heaven as a warning. And, of course, many times today we don't talk about hell. But if you don't talk about hell, then you really don't need a Savior to save you from going to hell. And we are all sinful people. We are going to stand before the throne of judgment. And we hope that people one day will understand what, you know, the two alternatives are. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like, of course, to get either one of the items we're talking about or all of them, they're all available through our ministry. And then, of course, we hope many of you out there will go to our website at RadioLiberty.com and look at the various items we have. If you'd like to get a copy of our newsletter, our latest newsletter goes into the background of the Fitzgerald Report, a report that was put in the Congressional Record back in 1953 and has been actively suppressed since that time. It's on cancer treatments, effective cancer treatments. Why would anybody suppress information on successful cancer treatments? Well, you'll certainly want to get our January newsletter, and we'd be glad to send you a free copy if you call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We hope, of course, that you'll tell others about our programs. You can listen to our programs on the Internet 3 hours a day at RadioLiberty.com, 1 hour a day on Genesis, GCNLive.com, and 1 hour on AmericanNewsNet.com. You can listen to our shortwave programs 4 hours a day, our satellite programs on Telstar 5, 9 hours a day, and you won't get anything accomplished, but you will certainly get a lot of information that we hope will help you in the days that lie ahead. Again, our number, 1-800-544-8927, our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. And, of course, remember, we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. So please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And again, our number, 1-800-544-8927. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
On the Information Radio Network, I'm John Russell. White House Press Secretary Tony Snow says the Bush administration is delighted to hear that Iraq's cabinet has now signed off on a new law sharing the country's oil wealth.
We have not seen it, so I can't characterize the text, but that is a hugely important step, and it will go before the Council of Representatives, the Parliament, very soon.
Scientists are recommending new ways to keep America's money printer one step ahead of the counterfeiters. Correspondent John Belmont explains.
It's estimated 5 every million current bills are fake, and copiers are getting so good that the National Research
Research Council says even amateurs will be able to duplicate almost any two-dimensional image within 10 years. And consider making paper money feel different by adding fibers or tiny holes. The feds could embed a small lens that could be folded over to reveal complex micro-images. Or they could add intricate starburst patterns.